Preparing to delve in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Delve. My name's Nathan.
And I'm Alex.
Today, we have a March news reviews, like we always do. We're a news show. We are always a news show, and don't let anyone tell you differently. How was your March, by the way?
Sleepy.
Sleepy? Any of the other dwarves from Snow White that you saw?
It was a little dopey.
Little dopey? Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of sneezy going around.
Oh, there is so much sneezy going around. And you need a dock for that.
Yeah, you need a dock when you're sneezing.
We're starting to see less snow up here, so that might make people a little happy.
Or grumpy, depends on who you
are. Or grumpy, depending on who you are, if you like to catch that powder on the slopes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway, we're all feeling a little bit like the Seven Dwarves. We also had a few important stories for March. Big news in the tabletop community. Wanted to get some thoughts on it right here.
Big news.
As many people are probably aware, Critical Role is a show. Do you know what Critical Role is, Alex?
I vaguely heard of it.
Critical Role is a show where a bunch of nerdy-ass voice actors play D&D. And it's also incredibly popular. It's probably the largest live play in the space, really.
How popular is it, Nathan?
It's popular enough that on a live broadcast, they have usually well over 100,000 people watching live.
That's a lot of fucking nerds.
That's a lot of fucking nerds, and that exactly is. So they have had a very long-running campaign. D&D is like a big affiliate for them now. For this thing that was once just, like, really a home game. And I think the actual, people will correct me on it, but the legend of it was basically that Liam O'Brien, who's one of the players, wanted to do something fun for his birthday, so they started this campaign. And then they started to actually broadcast it, and then everybody went banana nut butters for it.
That's a thing. You know, we should do this for my birthday. You know what? This is really fun. We should let other people watch it. Oh, now everyone likes it.
You know, things that you want to do on your birthday are usually the best things to do. Because you're doing it just for your love of a thing.
You know, I feel like you're right. We should, for my birthday, do something I love to do and want to do and broadcast it. Probably going to a strip club.
Okay, I don't think we're legally allowed to do that.
You know, I've never heard anything that says you can't legally live stream a performance at a strip club. I assume if it's full nude, you don't.
So Critical Role, very big in the space, it means a lot to a lot of people, and now we actually know exactly how much, because earlier in the month, they released a Kickstarter. The idea was that they wanted to do an animated special that told the origin story of Vox Machina, which was the crew that they had during the first campaign. And that part hadn't really been broadcast, the actual origin story, because they were well into their campaign when they started. So The Legend of Vox Machina animated special went out to Kickstarter, and it funded basically immediately.
What was the base goal?
Base goal was $750,000.
That's a lot of money.
Yes, and they did that pretty much immediately. After which they basically also got to stretch goals. And by the time the first couple days had gone by, we were looking at about a $4 million Kickstarter.
What are we at now? Is the Kickstarter still going or is it over?
It is. It's going to be going on into April. So, yes. And it is currently at, I have it open right now, $8.2 million.
For an animated special.
Right. Now, here's what happened, is at a certain point when they realized just how insane this had gotten, the animated special is turning into a series, because they realized that that's enough money that they could make quality animation for probably at least 6, 7, 8 episodes or more.
At that money amount, six or seven episodes is over $1 million production cost per episode, Nathan.
Yeah, well, it also depends on how long they are. They did explain that, like, with the animation house that they have, in order to create, you know, what they wanted, current rates are about $30,000 per minute for an animated cost. The animation house that they are currently working with is Titmouse, and they're pretty damn good. I mean, they're the ones that kind of did, like, Venture Brothers, Metalocalypse.
Okay.
It's a good house. It's a good animation studio you're probably familiar with.
Yeah.
Yes, they've done stuff for Disney, Adult Swim, Cartoon Network, and Amazon, Netflix. They've done a lot of stuff. They're the ones that they had already decided they wanted to go with. So in order for them to do it, that's what they're kind of looking at. But yeah, at this point, who knows? Sky's the limit, I suppose, and it would just be more episodes, longer episodes, and just continually upping the quality and what they could do. So yeah, it's gone far and above. But the most important thing to note is it is actually a record breaker, because it is now the most funded TV or film project ever on Kickstarter. That actually beats out, Mystery Science Theater 3000 that did a campaign back in 2015.
Does it beat out that potato salad campaign?
Oh, I don't think that anything does. Remember, I'm just talking about film and television projects.
Oh, potato salad was a thing that got funded on Kickstarter as well.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, more. I'm sure things have gotten funded for more money, but not in that realm.
I was just curious, that's all.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't know if potato salad did that well. But anyway, this still has quite a bit of time to go, and it looks like it's, you know, not losing a ton of steam. But my question to you, now that we've kind of gone over that, is basically, do you think that this has any kind of a reflection on the state of tabletop gaming? Does this say anything for, you know, the market for tabletop gaming, or is this kind of tangential to that?
First of all, I'm looking at potato salad. It only raised $55,000. It only raised $55,000 on Kickstarter.
But their inherent costs were like nothing. So
their inherent cost was really nothing. I just want to see how many backers the Kickstarter for Vox Machina has. 60,000
Yes.
507 to be
Yes.
exact. So that says a lot about the tabletop and tabletop live play community.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's big. That's only 60,000 people. What's the math on that? That's roughly every single backer, all 60,500 and now 8 backers.
Yes.
Donating $135 each.
Yes, that is true.
This is a demographic that will spend money happily on the things they're interested in, their hobbies, mm-hmm. or in this case, the creators that they really enjoy being Critical Role.
You know, the biggest backer level, it seems to be, is the $100 or more level. So just to kind of give you an idea of where the bell curve pretty much.
Yep, 26,000 people have backed at the level of $100.
But you do notice that there are, like, if you look, there are over 1,000 backers at the $500 or more level.
There's 12,000 at the $20 level. I mean, 20 is the base level. Remarkably, 5 people have backed at $20,000, and there's still more levels. 5 people have backed at $25,000. Who are these people?
And why can they not listen to us?
The 5 people backing this at $25,000 or more,
mm-hmm.
I have no idea where they are getting off spending more than I make per year.
Yeah.
Working my life away.
Yeah.
On an animated D&D series.
It's probably like Stephen Colbert. It's probably like just people who really love role-playing that are in the... But I do want to also mention that those larger tiers, they had a limit of how many backers they would take at those levels. If they didn't put a limit on that, I don't know if that would be higher. Because they literally only had like 5 spots for those levels.
So I'm hit and miss on this, because I really love that this shows how much the tabletop community, or the people that like to watch live plays, are willing to give back. But on the same note, again, with the $25,000 being more than I actually make working full time all year.
Right.
It breaks my heart a little bit because I see so many other creators.
I get that.
Of different tabletop media, not just live plays.
Right.
Podcasts like us, for instance, or all the other podcasts we know about, or live streams we know about, that do these projects that are basically just doing it because they want to do it and not getting a whole lot in return monetarily, or let alone just even communication wise.
That's true.
And to see a project like this explode and show there is a community to back that stuff and to give back to that stuff and to interact with it and interested enough to break $8 million and 60,000 backers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what about all your small people, your indie, essentially, creators
right.
who don't make a living doing this, who scrape to get by, who barely make money to keep their websites up. It's like, it really irks me to a degree.
Well, I do know that there were some people that did feel a little disheartened, similar to like what you're saying. But there are also some other arguments to make. One of them is that this might not technically qualify as like as much of a tabletop thing as it is a television project. And if you were to look at it in those terms,
but the people backing it are the people
are probably in tabletop fans.
Yes. Yeah. They're not just people who watch like TV shows. They're specifically watching or listening to people play Dungeons and Dragons.
My thought process, and it was something that I wanted to touch on out of the gate, because I know that it can feel very disheartening when you see like a large project take off when you're doing your thing and maybe you're not getting as much support from it. My takeaway that I was trying to kind of like put out there just for indie developers, but no one sees my tweets, so no one cares.
I don't even see your tweets. I went on an unfollowing spree the other day, so.
Well, now maybe you'll see them. I had actually said, you know, for anyone who might feel disheartened, if you're in the indie game space, realize that this just says that there is indeed a market out there, that there are indeed people that are willing to put money into projects. Don't get discouraged. This means that the industry is alive, well, and kicking.
It's very alive. For instance, on the other side of the spectrum, the Root Kickstarter, as we're very familiar with Root and Patrick Leader and
and Leader Games.
Leader Games and Kyle, the artist who I play D&D with, because he is friends with David, because David originally designed Trove, which means Root is essentially building off of the game that David Somerville designed.
Mm-hmm.
16,000 backers at $1.3 million.
And that's an expansion.
And that's just an expansion to Root, which means more people have backed it by double than people that originally backed the base game for Root.
Oh, yes.
You know, this is not specifically a D&D live play or media. This is a physical game you can play. This, for instance, shows there are plenty of people willing to spend money in this area between just those two Kickstarters. There are plenty of people that have the money available to spend on games and media projects they enjoy.
Right.
Which is great news for the tabletop gaming sphere and for indie designers out there and all of you listening. Your project can get funded. Your games can get bought. Become Critical Role and become Root, and you will have succeeded.
And not just Root. I also wanted to make note of some of the other Kickstarters that we have talked about recently on the show to say that Thunder of the Thorn has been funded over double, got funded in about 30 hours. Also, if you might not have heard, but when I had Chris Locke on, we were talking about Lasers and Liches. He was telling me how he was going to be super thrilled if he could get up to, like, 60,000 for his Kickstarter.
That would be great.
That would be great. And it's even greater because he actually topped 100,000 before it was over. So there's definitely a market. And then the other thing is, if you remember when Craig was on and we were talking about Capers Noir, he had even made a mention that, like, oh man, I'm running my thing at the same time Critical Role is going on. This is an expansion. I don't know if there's going to be much of a market. And luckily, he funded in 30 minutes for Capers Noir.
Okay.
And he has done probably, oh, if I do the math here, a lot of times over what he was looking for a goal.
Oh, boy.
Six times over or something like that, with time to spare.
Oh, good.
Since I'm on it, there were a couple others that I actually knew about that I
feel like
just...
we should have done this from lowest number to highest, but hindsight's
a bitch. We
probably
should, but you know what? But it's kind of hard when you know that you're going to have to talk about Critical Role to do that, because that's kind of going to top
We're going to make this episode title very clickbaity. Critical Role Vox Machina, The Untold Story.
Not clickbait. I'll put it in. It's not clickbait.
Those meta tags, though. Critical Role, Vox Machina, Critical
Role. Yeah, you know.
World,
yeah, I'm getting better
Vox,
at the
Machina.
Getting better at the meta.
Yeah, this title is going to be named fantastically. We're going to get so many clicks of angry people that will not reply.
Yeah, exactly. Just to give you an idea, there were a couple others that kind of were under the radar, and I didn't find out until like much later on. But there's one like Swordsfall, which is a very interesting like role-playing game setting. It's actually referred to as an Afropunk sci fantasy world.
Oh, okay. Afropunk sci fantasy.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite.
Those are your favorite words put all together.
Yeah. I love having an Afropunk in my sci-fi fantasy. I usually wear an Afro in my punk sci-fi fantasy.
And I will say
I also wear some gears, so it's steampunk, not just punk.
Oh god. Anyway.
Also Victorian era, and I like to wear pinstripes with it. It's like my favorite Panic at the Disco song, but in role-playing game.
They were able to do about 600% funding in the first day.
We write games, not tragedies.
That's absolutely right. But no, they did, and that one was even one that kind of fell under the radar, and a lot of people were not fully aware of it. But no, has done incredibly well for what they wanted. And also, Alex, you're going to be so thrilled.
I'm thrilled already.
You remember exploding cats? Kittens? Remember exploding kittens?
I vaguely remember a thing we did where kittens exploded, yes.
Do you know that the creators of that actually created a new game?
I thought you were talking about actual cats exploding, but sure, we'll go with that.
Sorry. No, I mean the game Exploding Kittens.
Oh.
Anyway. The creators of that had recently finished a Kickstarter, and that was called Throw Throw Burrito.
Is this related to the Prometheus' book about burritos?
No, he made that very clear. He actually commented back, it's like, not to be confused with my book, which is also a burrito-based storyline, but no.
The main character, I believe, avenging his fallen burrito?
Oh, that's cool. Well,
we'll have him on eventually to talk about that.
Yeah, that's
things.
Probably a good thing, because Throw Throw Burrito, though, just to give you an idea, is basically, it's kind of like a card game, but it's also a game of dodgeball where you have to dodge burritos being thrown at you.
Are they real burritos? Do I get to eat them? Does
no,
the game
foam,
come delivered burritos. With live burritos? And by live,
they're,
I mean
they're foam burritos.
Still warm burritos. Please warm. Don't have living burritos sent to us.
No, they're burritos that have little faces on them, and
that's
they're made of foam.
That's not as exciting.
They successfully raised $2.5 million.
Is this kind of like any of the Cards Against Humanity?
No, it's actually...
No, I just mean like it's just one company that sticks to this one type of deal, which is just ridiculous.
I guess so. I mean, they're good at ridiculous. They have cards like Barky Sharky, which is like just like if a dog were a shark.
I don't.
But anyway,
no, we do sharks with black dragons, not dogs.
Dragon Sharky?
We call that the Death Shark.
Or Goth Sloth.
You know what? I want to see this. Any of our illustrator friends listening, please draw us a sloth.
Oh,
a Goth Sloth.
You don't have to worry, because it's in Throw Throw Burrito, Alex. It is an actual card in Throw Throw Burrito.
Any of our illustrator friends that are listening, please do not draw Goth Sloth anymore.
because they've already done it.
Sorry to have wasted your time.
What was our point in mentioning these?
They flew under the radar, but they have succeeded their goals exponentially so.
While there might be some people that are like, well, the Critical Role Kickstarter is a television and film project, it doesn't necessarily mean that the tabletop market is there. All these other projects are very much tabletop gaming projects.
I mean, that's one of those things, though. It's if your project is good, if you make a quality gaming experience, then all you have to do is, I mean, look at Patrick Leader and Leader Games and Vast and Root, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was maybe his second or third game that he published.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of just came out of left field for everyone, but he knew kind of the ways to go about it. So if you know someone who can help and assist with, like, a Kickstarter program or a way to do Kickstarter well, and you know the podcasts to talk to and the reviews to get on and whatnot, I mean, it's a lot. There's going to be a lot of headache, I'm sure, getting all of that organized. But there is absolutely a market.
Just in general, I mean, one, having a great product that really, you know, gets people jazzed, but then also being able to build a community, being able to know how to communicate with people, and if you have marketing experience, it definitely helps. There's a lot of factors that go into it, but you get the perfect storm with all of those things, and you can have a really successful campaign, and you can end up with something that really inspires a lot of people. Sometimes it's a laser dragon. Sometimes it's a burrito.
Sometimes it's playing D&D with your friends.
Sometimes it's playing D&D and your friends. And
speaking of, we've got the cast of Vox Machina next week on Delve.
Here.
That may or may not be true.
That may or may not be true. I will leave it up to you to figure out which one. I guess you'll just have to wait and find out. My God, if that was actually a thing, can you believe? My God, it would blow people's minds.
I mean, why can't it be a thing?
Because I think that they're probably busy with that $8 million Kickstarter they got to deal.
Oh, no, they're fine.
But at any rate, so yeah, so in your estimation, just kind of to finish up this topic, good sign for tabletop gaming?
Overall, yeah, I'd say it's a good sign.
The other topic that I wanted to get to, which I'm so thrilled to know that you don't know about, so I get to tell you, is actually about something else we like, which is video gaming. You like video games, right?
Oh, right, we do.
But anyway, something that might affect a lot of creators and stuff is an announcement that came out in March about Google Stadia. So Google is basically, if I can try and summarize this, because it's a little bit tricky to explain. But anyway, Google wants to get into the gaming market.
Of course they do.
Of course they do. Well, who wouldn't? It's a huge industry with a lot of money at stake.
They're a little late. Maybe it'll be like their Google Plus?
No, actually, what Google Stadia is, it is going to be a cloud-based game service. So there's like an actual box that's involved with Stadia, but your games, the data and everything is actually in a cloud-based service. It kind of eliminates a physical console or a PC that you need or any kind of gaming requirements, because it's all basically done online. Games would all be played over that streaming service. They say that if you wanted to play like a new game that you had not downloaded or anything, it's about 5 seconds from saying I want to play it to being in the game, just to give you an idea. It's working on higher stats, like 10 teraflop data, so that actually makes it higher than a PS4 Pro or an Xbox One X. So you could do like real native 4K gaming over stream, and there's a few other things that they were talking about involved in that. Like, for instance, if you are currently gaming and streaming over this system and you're watching it, there would be like a little button like join game. So if you wanted to try and get into a game with one of your favorite streamers, you could queue up for that. There's a little assist button, the Google Assist button. So if you're trying to get through a puzzle actively in a game, it will link you to like walkthrough guides. I was trying to figure out if this was a good thing or a bad thing.
So it's cloud-based, though?
Yes, it's cloud-based. So the game itself is actually like on a cloud server.
What if I already have the game?
Sucks to be you.
Like, I know, like, for instance, Discord is like, hey, we have a store now, too.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, Discord, why? You're a chat app. You're for gaming. I get that. You're an overlay service, but I don't really want to buy games through you. I already have Steam for that.
I get it. How many times do I have to buy the same game over and over and over again?
If it's Skyrim, yes. Yeah. Just keep buying it. Don't stop. I have a friend who has it on PS4, PC, Switch, and VR. He's bought it 4 different times.
For the record, I pretty much tap out at, like, buying a game twice. I think that that's pretty much the most I've ever done. Mostly, like, if it's a reissue, or if it's on a different console, or if it's, like, a really good deal for something else that I can play it on. I usually don't go beyond that. And it has to be an exceptional game. It has to be something I really love.
So Deus Ex.
Yeah. Oh, Deus Ex, until they wouldn't let it work for Os X, that used to be my litmus test to see how good my new computer was, how fast it would actually go between load screens. I'd put Deus Ex on it. And you could see how the processing power increased with every generation.
I feel like Google's really good at some things, but really bad at other things, and they get to the party really kind of late.
Yeah, and they do try to come in with something big and beefy and make
it's like, hey, we have Google Plus, and we're like, dude, Facebook's already a thing. We already destroyed MySpace. What are you doing?
Yeah, Google's not exactly great for, like, original thoughts. They kind of come in and say, oh, this thing worked. What if we could just do it a lot bigger? I did take this over because there are a lot of concerns, and I've seen those, and I completely understand that. I had taken it over to Twitter. I had asked some people about it, mostly people that we know that actually review games, that do streaming, and just wanted to get their thoughts on it.
We know people that do those things?
We do know people that do those things.
We know people who do those things.
We know a lot of people that do streaming and do game dev and everything like that. And they had some really interesting things to note. Specifically that, like, a lot of this does seem a little bit like speculation. That we don't really know if the quality of the internet in the United States is good enough to really support this without any lag or drop yet. Because, like, Google's been talking so much about fiber optic, and we're really not there where that's, like, a standard thing.
Yeah, that's not really an infrastructure that's in place.
No. And some people had mentioned, like, well, what if you have data caps? Or what if you're in a place where you don't have high speed? Or what happens if your service drops?
What happens if I cut the fiber optics and stick them into the things that make pretty pictures?
Okay, well, don't do that. I should mention, don't do that. But some of the other things that people were noting was the idea, well, what happens with, like, community guidelines? Like, what if my account gets suspended? Am I no longer able to play the games that I bought? If they say, oh, you violated our community standard, or maybe you swore too much, and we don't like that. You know, are your games basically, you know, held captive by Google? We really don't have a lot of answers on that. But on the other hand, some people did talk about the idea, and I do have to say this is probably the thing that people are excited about. Considering how much gaming PCs usually cost, considering how much, like, the physical hardware usually costs, how many times we have to buy new consoles, you know, if you think about, like, the console cycle, if there was one singular box where all of that system requirements and everything went away.
Oh, so the Steam box.
Sort of like the Steam.
The Steam system they made.
Yeah.
The one that has, I assume, has sold very poorly.
No, it did so well. Are you kidding me?
I feel like you're being very sarcastic.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry.
And the Steam controller that I recently saw a post on Reddit Gaming with about this is what the Steam controller looks like after, like, 15 months of not being used.
Mm-hmm.
It just coated completely in dust because no one uses them. You're coming into a scene that already has the things it has. Like, yes. Steam, yes, Steam, you took off like a rocket, and people are using you because you have a lot to offer, but trying to break kind of into that next part of the market,
yeah,
where you don't really belong, yeah. Same with Discord going, we're gonna sell games, and you can play games through us now, and we're just kind of like, Discord, just stop.
Yeah.
Focus on the thing that you should be focusing on.
And the thing is, like, does it end up replacing consoles? Is that the idea?
I don't think it will.
I don't think
you're ever going to replace a console because The thing about the consoles, I own an Xbox, for instance. Not me personally, you, for instance. You own a PS4.
I actually own an Xbox. I don't own a PS4.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I have an Xbox One, but the S, not the cool X1.
So you own an Xbox One, yes. And you can go out and get Xbox One titles.
Yes.
You know, Google isn't going to go, you have a, whatever they're going to call this thing, Google Stadia, and you're not going to have Google Stadia titles. You're going to have to entice people who make these things to want to put them on your platform, but right. To have these people want to put them on your platform, you need to have the audience that wants the things that you're going to put on your platform. Yeah. So unless you have an established audience to attract the creators to attract your audience, you're kind of at a tough sell to start with.
Yeah, unless you can find a way where you can make a deal with some other game stores that if you currently have a library on, let's say, a Steam, or if you have these games on purchase by other, like, networks that you automatically have them unlocked, it's a hard sell for especially people that are up on games to say that I have to buy the game again.
I will buy Skyrim every time I see it.
And it will look great on Google Stadia. One of the things they were talking about, too, when they actually do the, when they were showing it, is that it definitely did look like there were still, even in optimal settings, like on their own network, we're talking about Google doing an official presentation, it really did look like there was a response issue between the time you did something on the controller to the actual input on the screen. That there was some lag. So it might be a little tricky in non-optimal situations if we're looking at it in the best possible light.
You know, if Google really wanted to get on the gaming ball a lot better, I would think they would take... Doesn't Google own YouTube?
I believe it's the Google Tubes.
GoogTube? Don't they own GoogTube?
I think they own GoogTube.
So, I think if they wanted to get gaming better, what they should do is actually treat their gaming YouTubers like they treat everyone else. MatPat from Game Theory and Film Theory fame, or Disdain if you like, because a lot of people hate on MatPat for X, Y, and Z reasons with no real reason. He did a video semi-recently that was YouTube and the algorithm treats gamers on YouTube as substandard to everyone else.
That was a good video.
You did watch that one?
I did watch that one, but yes.
And you know what I'm saying? Where the algorithm and YouTube themselves basically don't consider them the same as top tier, even though they are the top tier and the highest subscribed video and creators on YouTube. Right. They're still treated as, like, second-class
citizens, yeah. And it is unfortunate because also, they, as he explained in that video, they also do a ton of charity work, and they've raised a ton of money for a lot of good causes. And so,
and this can go for tabletop streams as well. There's a lot of those that do charity streams.
Very much. Very much so. And they're still doing it today.
Yeah. I don't think you really see a lot of non-gaming channels that do those. So I think if Google really wanted to get in the gaming aspect bigger, you know, because Twitch...
Maybe promote it?
They could treat their creators and their people making these things like they actually should be treated, which is like any other human doing a thing that gets them hundreds of thousands of millions of views daily.
I will say... And this is something that may make you feel a little bit better about it. Do you know one of the people who was actually up there on stage for the Google Stadia announcement?
Was it me?
No, but it was MatPat.
Was it? He does work right alongside Google sometimes.
So maybe in his estimation, part of gaming YouTube, maybe they do think that this would be good. Like, maybe this is going to help support those creators. And if so, great. I do feel like there is a big focus for them on the idea of streaming games, because of that whole idea of integration with your favorite streamers and being able to access games. Like, if you see Ninja playing Fortnite, for instance, and you're like, ooh, join game, and then X number of people who are watching live could be in a match. You know, I can see that being useful for integration for streamers, for gaming videos and such.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, and I do under a couple people that responded back definitely did have this concern, and I totally understand that, which is, if you think about the Google graveyard and the dead products that Google has killed and laid to rest before they were actually things, that maybe we're getting excited or concerned for a thing that really doesn't materialize in the way you think. That is a legitimate concern. It is something that they have done before, and it's probably a thing that they'll do into the future. I don't know if that's going to happen with Stadia, but it is definitely a thing on the table. The basic concerns, not sure it can do what it says it's going to do. Don't know if there's going to be community guidelines that actually force you off the platform, what that means for your gaming library. Don't know if it's going to actually become a thing. Not sure if our internet service is going to be able to handle the latency you need. You know, there's a lot of big questions out there. I guess my big thing, though, I don't know if this is going to end up being a good thing for indie creators. Like, if it's going to help them at all get visibility, I don't know if it will. If some of the, if it will be easier or harder to actually get your game seen or get your game onto a Google Stadia platform to be played than it would on, like, the Xbox Marketplace, or if it would be on a Steam Marketplace. But it's kind of hard, because Steam pretty much has everything.
Steam does.
Like, if you go on to a Steam or a GOG or any of those, you can pretty much find any game that's ever existed.
And if you can't, well, there are places to find these things online.
The Epic Game Store. They have exclusivity for a year. That's a whole other thing, folks. The console war comes to computers.
Oh, boy.
Yay. I'm glad. Oh, I'm sure everybody was thrilled about that. Just synopsis. Google Stadia, good thing, bad thing, or not really a thing?
I guess we'll see how it goes, Nathan. I guess we'll see. And we'll bring you back the latest news on Google Stadia when we have it.
Yeah, when we have it. Up to the minute discussion on this stuff, because we're a news program.
Welcome to Delve News.
Welcome to Delve News, a new program that you're going to love every single day.
We're doing this newscast daily.
We're doing a daily newscast. It broadcast everywhere, especially if you have a ham radio. Hey, but you know what? If you liked this, let me know. Because who the hell knows? Maybe we'll do it again. It's kind of nice to be able to talk about just a couple current events and just kind of get a little pulse on the industry and see what's going on. But yeah, March was just especially a very
sleepy and grumpy and beginning of the show.
No, March had some really big things that happened in it for the time being. And of course we're ending on PAX, where we get even more information about more, well, actually, things. Both tabletop and digital gaming. So
yes,
it's a good time to be alive. We'll see what April brings. And for anybody who is out there, one other important piece of news is that we will have had a special video come out this morning. So please make sure to check that out and see what amazing things we have in store for you.
You can find that on YouTube.
You can find that on YouTube, and you can also find that on delvecast.com. And hey, you know what? We might end up talking about it a little bit more at length when we do our April live show, which should be on the 6th, Saturday.
Yes.
At 9 p.m. over on our Discord channel and on our Twitch channel. So please feel free to drop on by, give a shout. Well, maybe not shout, but join us for that. Maybe discuss a little bit more of that in detail, and all sorts of fun things. Probably more about some news, because actually our live shows, we tend to do some kind of like news and update stuff, you know, kind of get a pulse on stuff. So hey, if you like these, maybe you'll like our live shows too.
Our live shows are fantastic and long, and we have good people and great things.
Yes, we have a very good community. We're always looking to grow it. We're always looking to get new voices into the mix.
We're looking to raise $8 million for things we don't know about yet.
We are, yeah, our new thing is Delve is going to try to raise $8 million, and then there's going to be an animated special, and it's going to be about the two of us.
It'll be our origin story.
It will be our origin story. And
from birth.
From birth.
Perfect. It's just gonna be you for like 5 years.
Can you imagine?
And then I come along.
5 years of Nathan and then Alex joined the party. Even if they started our origin story, do you remember what the first episode was like when we recorded the first episode?
Oh, I meant of life.
I'm thinking, skip ahead to the important part. And we'll get to remember, do you remember what it was like when we recorded the first episode of the show in your room?
I had a headset.
Yeah, the headset. Yeah.
With a shitty mic.
Yeah. Imagine if that was animated. It's the most boring animation I would ever see.
How about we don't imagine that?
That would be terrible. You could just pull audio right from the episode itself. That would be terrific. If you like that, we'll get right on that Kickstarter. That's going to have to be the next big project, our Kickstarter for the giant animated Delve origin story. You're going to love it. We just need to raise.
You can find us on Twitter. I am at EXP Limited. The show is at Delve Podcast, and Nathan is at Cytanium.
That's right. All those things. Make sure to like and review and subscribe if you are on the iTunes, Google Play, or we're part of Google too. Apparently,
we're on Google, Spotify as well.
We're also on Spotify. Yeah, so you can find us on all those places. And
tell us where you found us.
Yes, please tell us where you found us, because analytics are real crappy on a lot of places.
I think we have like two listeners.
Yeah,
There are patrons.
We have two listeners. There are patrons. Oh, speaking of which, we'd also have a Patreon.
You were going to say we had a new patron. I was going to be like, we do?
No.
Who's that?
No. But we do have two shiny level patrons, Dom Perry and Bonnie Ainsworth. Oh, and I would also like to say, too, if anybody goes over to our Patreon, which we will link in the description.
Just click the Patreon banner on our website.
You can do that, too. You can go to our site and get there. But even if you are not a patron, we actually have a couple things up.
Which means go check it out anyways.
Wink, wink.
Because we're giving you free stuff that's not on the website.
That's right. Because we have some... It's actually a repository for some of our new projects that we are testing out. Right now, Dom Perry, the aforementioned Dom Perry, is doing a show called More Than Meets the Die that he's working on. So we actually have two episodes up there right now for some of his test episodes that are actually quite good. He has one with the Kind GM, and he has one with Andy Watson, and they are super fun, and you can only find them on our Patreon, so make sure to go over there and tell us what you think, and give us a little bit of feedback. We'd love to have it. I should actually mention, talking about not just like their time in tabletop gaming, but also their outside interests.
Yes.
Things that are beyond what they normally...
So where our show talks to people sometimes about the ins and outs of game design and the mechanics and their Kickstarters and all that good stuff that we love to talk about, Dom is talking to people about people in the gaming sphere that are designers and creators about things that are adjacent to their gaming experiences and their creation experiences.
Right. You can almost imagine, like, you know how when we have guests on and we go on a digression, when we kind of go a little bit off topic and we start talking about things that, you know, just kind of interest us that are a little tangential, this show is actually built for that. If you get a chance, go and check it out. It's available for you. It's free. Go check it out. And you can see some of the new things that we are working on over there. So with all that said, that has been your March Muse. See what I did there?
Muse or news?
March Muse. Because cats.
I do like Muse. They are a good band.
That is all the news that's fit to print. We're not in print, are we?
We're not in print. Until next time, when more news has become available to your ear holes.
That's our outro. So thank you for joining us, everyone. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.
Bye. You may get kicked out, but I want to do something that I find I enjoy for my birthday. Yep. And we can broadcast it, and it can be like a strip club thing.
Okay, that's great. Everyone, welcome to Critical Hole, everybody.
I don't think that's a good name. That's a triple X shop, not
that's a triple X shop.
Strip club. Different things.